CBS Radio's The New Sky.
This is Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston and some of the best co-hosts and fascinating topics of consciousness available. Shift Happens with channeler David Wilson, Tracy McBurney's incredible energy consciousness, Mikhail Myers' financial consciousness, and nuclear physicist Thomas Campbell with quantum physics and consciousness. It's an incredible mix of the best teachers on consciousness on every show. Call Intuitive Soul and Friends now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
Welcome. Today is actually Wednesday, and we are doing a show today with Thomas Campbell. And we're doing it today because of your wonderful holiday that's coming up tomorrow, and we'll also re-air this show on Friday. So I'm very excited to have you visit and share with us, Tom. I find how you see the world as very unique and fascinating. So I love talking with you because it allows my mind to expand, because I get to see life from a different perspective. So I'm really glad that you chose to join me with this show that you will be the last co-host every Friday on between 1 and 2 p.m. So welcome, Tom.
Thank you very much, Lori. It's my pleasure to be here.
So tell us, because this is a totally new audience from Intuitive Soul Radio, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this, and how it sort of evolved.
Okay. I am a physicist, as the intro said. my thesis work was in nuclear, although I've never actually worked in that field. I ran into Bob Monroe early in my career. A person that my boss, actually, in my very first job out of graduate school, introduced me to Bob's books. And a few months later, I found out that Bob Monroe actually lived only about a 40-minute drive from where we lived. Mm-hmm. So we made an appointment to go out to talk to Bob Monroe. And, of course, I wanted to know, is this guy nuts or what? Because he had written this book, and the book had all this fantastic stuff in it about how his experiences while he was out of body. And when you read a book like that, there's not much you can do to make it, to really get it within context of your own experience, because I didn't have that experience. So it was like, is this guy making it up to sell books? Is this guy psychotic and just thinks he had these experiences? What is it? And of course, I met Bob, and Bob was a very real, very genuine person. He wasn't trying to sell anything. He was a smart fella. He interacted very much like an engineer. I'm a physicist, so I deal with a lot of engineers and mathematicians and that sort of thing. And Bob had this very linear, logical manner about him that he felt to me like an engineer, even though I'm not sure Bob was actually an engineer. He was in radio and then later as producing radio programs, and then later into the cable business in Charlottesville, Virginia. He owned the only cable company there back in the days. This was early 1970s, like 1972. Wow. That's when cable was just starting to, come on the radar screen. It was just existing, and he was kind of ahead of the game and started up a cable company and doing very well. Was very, very successful and prosperous businessman. And anyway, as I met Bob for the first time, he had just built a lab for the study of consciousness, because he had had these out of body experiences just happen to him, and he couldn't stop them from happening to him, which he tried because he thought maybe he was going insane. But he talked with various people, read some things, and eventually decided that he would just explore them and see where they took him. And then he wrote his books based on that exploration. But he always wanted this out-of-body experience to be credible, to be, scientific, have a scientific basis. He didn't want just to be the crazy old guy that had funny experiences. He wanted this out-of-body to have some credibility to it. So he built this lab for studying consciousness. And at the time, I think he had no idea what was going to happen there or how that would work out. It was like build it and they will come, sort of an idea. So there I was, and a couple of other folks from where I worked were there too, and most all of us were scientists and engineers. So he asked the group, he says, are any of you like to come help me you know, work in this lab and study consciousness? And, of course, I jumped at the opportunity, and another fellow, Dennis Menerick, who was an electrical engineer, he jumped at the opportunity too. So starting a few weeks after that, Dennis and I started coming out to visit Bob Monroe, and the deal was that we would do his science. We would build the equipment and basically mm-hmm. make his building into a laboratory if he would teach us the out-of-body experience, if he would help us, you know, make that an experience of ours rather than just us trying to study his experience. We wanted it to be our experience, because if it's not your experience, then it's never really real. So he agreed. So we would come there, and from then on for the next 5 years, we were spending about 20 hours a week with Bob Monroe, and he was teaching us the out-of-body techniques that he did, and we were building his lab and building equipment and testing you know, theories of how to make this science. So that was my introduction. So here I am, a physicist freshly out of graduate school, and suddenly I find out that reality is a lot bigger than what I thought it was. And being a physicist, what I do is model reality. So my mission from then on was to try to understand, how does it work? What is this reality? What are its limits? What's, you know, what can you do there? What is, you know, what are the, what's its science? What's its causality? What can't you do there and why? So I spent the next 35 years studying, doing research in the non-physical, if you will, because Dennis and I both learned in a year or so how to go out of body anytime we wanted to. It became a very easy thing to do, and we did a lot of experiments trying to prove it to ourselves that it was real and we weren't making it up, you know. And we did a lot of remote viewing experiments. We did healing, and we did other things as well. Anything we could think of that would be evidential. And as far as the statistics went, we were doing things and gathering information that was like 1 in 3 million that we got that information just by guessing. You know, it's what we were looking for, of course, was statistical significance, and that gives you what's the significance, what is the probability that you could do this just guessing, you know? And it's like, well, to get this answer, this information by guessing, be like 1 in 2 million. So then some idea that you were actually getting information, and it wasn't just chance that you were doing it. It wasn't lucky guessing. So anyway, we knew that, and I still, and Dennis too, both of us would ask each other all the time, is this really real? You know, are we really doing this, or is there something else going on here? And one day we came up to the lab, and Bob had a new experiment for us to do, and that was, he set us out, both Dennis and I individually, in an out-of-body trip, told us to meet above the lab and go off on an adventure together. Now, we were in what was called check units. What these were just small rooms with a waterbed, a mic suspended from the ceiling right above our mouths, and there were three of them, and they were isolated acoustically, so you couldn't hear. Sound didn't go from one to the other, and they were isolated electromagnetically. They had a solid metal walls around them, all bonded at the seam, so there were no cracks, and then grounded. So these were isolation chambers, if you will. And Dennis was in number three. I was in number one. There was an empty one between us. So we went off on this adventure, and Bob had trained us, as we went out of body, we would tell him, we would use the mic and talk to him and tell him what it was we were experiencing. He would ask us questions, and then he would give us some advice of what to do next and so on. This was how he trained us. So we were used to going in an out of body state and talking about it as we experienced it. So Dennis and I did that. We met above the lab. We had conversation. We talked to each other. We went out. We probably spent close to 2 hours on this particular adventure. We ran into entities that we had conversations with. We saw structures and things that we commented about. And after it was all over, Dennis and I come kind of staggering out of our little booth and went out into the control room where Bob was, where he had taped our responses individually, and he had talked to us individually. That's what he was able to do from the control room. And he said, well, guys, do you really think you were together? You know, Bob had a very sardonic kind of sense of humor. And we looked at each other, and I said, well, it seemed that way to me. And Dennis said, well, it seemed that way to me. And he said, well, listen to this. And he flipped both of the cassette players at the same time, running Dennis's tape of what he had said and my tape of what I had said. And there we were, answering each other's questions, talking to each other, seeing the same things, having conversations with third parties, and it was obvious that we were together. You know, we were interacting, and that interaction was clear when you're listening to these tapes. So that was the big moment for me that, you know, I tell people for the next 2 or 3 weeks, I wandered around kind of only half conscious saying, my God, it's real. Oh my God, it's real. You know, it was that sort of thing, because then it's a matter of understanding it. What can I do with it? So 35 years later, I had a pretty good idea of how it all worked, and I put that together in the books called My Big Tao. And they went, they were published, I think, in like 2003, in February of 2003. So they've been out a little while. After I published that, those books were mainly about consciousness. It was a theory of consciousness and how all the rest of the world, our physical world and so on, was all derived from consciousness and how we are consciousness. So it was a theory of everything in that sense. And then I realized after the books were published that, you know, these same ideas do good physics too. The same concepts that I had explaining consciousness explained why particles were probability distributions, was the big mystery of quantum mechanics. They explained why the speed of light is a constant, which is the big mystery of relativity. They explained how reverse causality worked, how the experiments they do with mind-matter interaction at Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research, PEAR Labs, it explained how those worked. So suddenly I realized that what I had done was actually good physics as well as good metaphysics. So then it all kind of fell together that this was one overarching theory that explained even more than I had thought it would explain. It explained physics and the big unknowns like the Big Bang. What was before the Big Bang? How did that happen? How is it that the universe expands in an accelerating way? See, physicists will think about that and they'll say, well, what does that mean? The universe is expanding. Expanding into what? You know, what's out there for us to expand into? And, of course, that doesn't make sense if you live in an objective reality. There is nothing outside the universe if you believe in material objectivism like most scientists do. And then where's all the new space come from? It expands. And they have these issues. And, of course, all those issues go away when you look at this as a virtual reality. And it explains just science and metaphysics become one thing. They're not two separate things. It's all one logical explanation. One logical scientific explanation explains all of it. The paranormal things, you know, what happens after you die, all these things then just drop out as logical consequences of consciousness.
Right. Consciousness. Wow. Well, with that, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we will talk more about it. But now you can understand, if you've been listening to this, why I find it so intriguing, because you've done some things that I don't imagine a lot of people have done. And you, so to you, you have actual proof. So we will be back after break, and we are talking with Thomas Campbell. And I love Tom. And we'll be back. You're listening to Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Discover your spirit. Listen to Spirit Guide Radio, where spiritual guides nourish your soul every weekday. Heidi Hollis, The Outlander, The Zodiac Girls with Solaris, Laura, and Kira. Laura Lee's Spirit Salon. Ask Dr. Doug with Dr. Doug Lira. Life by Number with Celeste and Keeping Life Real with Dr. Susan J. Stone. It's Spiritually Speaking Radio, Spirit Guide Radio, at 11 p.m. Eastern on New Sky Radio. NewSkyRadio.com. New horizons, no boundaries. New Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
In your eyes, emeralds from mountains and thrust through the sky, never revealing their depth. And tell me that we belong together, dressed out with the trappings of love. I'll be captivated.
I want to help you to embrace the life you've always envisioned. Listen to us on the I'm Thankful Network, Monday through Friday. Listeners from all the backgrounds come together as we identify the truly important aspects of life. The I'm Thankful Network is like comfort food for the soul. In short, we want you to be positively positive about where you are headed. Join us every weekday for the I'm Thankful Network. Fun, educational, and empowering. Tune in to find yourself all over again.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Welcome back. You're with Lori Houston and physicist Tom Campbell, and we are talking about consciousness. This is Tom's first show. Tom will be on every last Friday of the month. And I hope you were part of our first segment, because he really talked about, you know, how he got involved and really how intricately he was involved with Bob Monroe and the Monroe Institute, really before it even became the Monroe Institute. So he was kind of instrumental in helping, I guess, Bob kind of expand the scientific base of the work he did. And it also assisted Tom to expand his physicist reality into the physical and non-physical, and how quantum physics and everything sort of ties together. Now, Tom wrote a series of books. There are three books, and they're called My Big Toe, which is also how to reach Tom through the web, is mybigtoe.com. Tom, tell us tell us why My Big Toe.
Well, toe is a physics term for theory of everything. And Einstein started that. I think the TOE acronym first was created with Albert Einstein working on what was called unified field theory. He wanted to unify all of physics. We had at that time quantum mechanics and relativity, both of which fundamentally contradicted each other. Each one has a tenet that they require for that science, and that tenet is basically refuted in the other. So there's a fundamental philosophical disconnect between relativity and quantum mechanics, and that told Einstein that there was some other bigger understanding that should derive both of them, that neither one was fundamental, but there was some bigger scientific understanding that would produce both quantum mechanics and relativity. So he was searching for this TOE, which would be a theory of everything. And that's where the word came from. Now, mine's a big TOE because I not only have to unify science and physics, I have to connect, I have to derive really quantum mechanics and relativity and all the rest of the things that happen in the physical world. Besides that, I need to derive consciousness, metaphysics, if you will, the paranormal as well as the normal. Everything has to be derived from one scientific understanding. So that makes it a big toe. So that's why it's my big toe. And the my is in there, not because I was so proud of doing it, but because if it's not your experience, it's not your reality. So you can understand what I've written intellectually, but until you experience the larger reality, then it's just intellectual. And that's a shadow of the reality. The reality to be yours, the truth to be yours, it has to be your experience. So that's why it's my big toe. And my big toe is the place for others, for my readers, to start to generate their own big toe. And that's really the point of the books, for a reader to pick up wherever they are in their experience and help them move forward and create their own big toe. Because if they believe or disbelieve mine, neither one of those attitudes will take you anyplace important. The right. Important place you need to go is creating your own big toe from your own experience. And if you continue to work on your own big toe, it'll eventually, you know, end up in truth. Eventually, you will get to where you find what reality is all about. So there's many, many paths to the same truth. There is but one truth, but there's literally, you know, thousands and thousands of valid ways to get there. So everybody working on their own big toe will eventually get there as long as they keep working at it and don't ever get to the point where they believe they're done.
Right. And that, I mean, not all, I mean, you've said everything there. It's, there's so much that you've said there that it's even, I almost don't want to talk about it, but I mean, really, this is part of the problem. One, we intellectualize a lot of theories from a perspective of, it's almost like we can connect in with the consciousness and know it from a certain perspective, but until you actually experience it, you don't have that same true understanding. And truth, of course, does come in so many different ways, even though there's really only one, I guess, universal truth or one place, the way we come to it, as you said, can be, you know, now 7 billion different ways. We sure. Certainly, you know, and you came about it from a very different place as well. You came about it from, you know, out-of-body experiences, which is not the same as meditation. And the way you came about it, even though meditation, we need to get into a meditative state, or we need to get our mind into a lower brainwave so that we can access these energies. They're also not necessary to get to a place that we want, which is within us, the inner soul journey that we all take, or however we want to word that. But it's about, you know, sort of, I guess, getting to that place of understanding love or joy or grace or however we want to put it, compassion, depending on what religion you're from. But it's getting to that inner journey that, and our own evolution that will allow us to get where we want to go.
Precisely. That is, you have done it. That was exactly right. Now, you know, maybe a few comments on that is that
I
approached it from both being able to experience out-of-body states at will and also being a physicist. And I had my experiences. I wanted to understand how they worked. So the My Big Toe books are really written for the large majority of people in the Western world anyway who are left brain dominant. You can get to the same truths without, you know, from a right brain perspective, they're just obvious. You intuit them. Yes, this is, you know, this is the way to be, and you can grow accordingly. You don't need to go out of body. You don't need to ever do anything paranormal. None of that's important. You don't need to meditate. Meditation is just a tool. And if your right brain is fully operational and functional, you kind of get to this end point, this one truth we're talking about, intuitively. But there's lots of material to support that. So you can read the Bhagavad Gita, and you can read about Siddhartha and Buddha, and you can read Zen, and you can read Gnosticism, and all these various, the Kabbalah, all these various mystical traditions, and they all are pointing you in basically the same direction. And the direction is just as you said, it's compassion, it's love, it's caring. Now in my books, because mine are scientific and are for the left brain person who's into logical process, then I define love in terms of entropy, and consciousness is a digital information system, and digital information systems evolve by lowering their entropy. So it's a scientific way of approaching the nature of reality, but it ends up pretty much in the same place that Buddha ended up, or that any of the other masters of consciousness ended up. So I end up with that. With many of the same conclusions, because, like you say, there's not one truth, but many ways to it. But my books tend to give a pathway that the person requiring logical process can tread and feel comfortable that they're not falling into a belief trap or falling into some kind of wacky stuff that requires big assumptions on their part. So that kind of is what makes it different. It starts with just two assumptions. One is that consciousness exists, and if we consider ourselves to be conscious, that's not a big stretch. Then the other assumption is that evolution exists, and evolution in a more generic sense than just biological evolution, but evolution means that large, complex, self-changing systems will change themselves in a way to better suit their environment. You know, they will self-modify to some criteria of success.
Right, but before you get further, unfortunately, we have to take another break, and that was a good place to sort of try and pause you. But we'll be back, and we'll talk more about this. You're listening to Intuitive Soul with Friends with Lori Houston and Tom Campbell, and on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Find answers, insight, and guidance. Contact your departed guides and angels, too, through medium Laura Lee. Join her on Spirit Salon every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central. Come raise some heaven with Laura Lee.
Through a fractal on a breaking wall, Imagine. Look up to the sky.
This is Intuitive Soul with Lori Houston.
248-545-SOUL.
Myself, a threadbare gypsy soul.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
NewSkyRadio.com.
Welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends with Tom Campbell. And we are actually doing the show today instead of on Friday just because of your U.S. Thanksgiving holiday. So I do want to say, you know, happy Thanksgiving to everybody who's listening, and I hope you have a great holiday. But we have Tom Campbell back, and we were talking about his books. In this segment, I think I want to expand on entropy because I think that's the one way that I really connect in with, well, I connect in with everything you talk about. I don't always see my world in the same way, but this one particular topic is how we sort of weave our stories together, because this is the this is how I sort of see the world. So let's talk about that a little bit more.
Okay. To start with, we'll have to kind of jump the readers right to the concept of consciousness is what's fundamental. Okay, everything else other than the larger consciousness system is virtual. The larger consciousness system itself is fundamental. And that larger consciousness system is an information system. Reality is data. And it is the computer. It's a digital information system, and it is able to work its way, do its thing with its ones and zeros. Now, these are just metaphors. Now, I talk in ones and zeros because we can understand that in terms of our own computers. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's alive, it's intelligent, it's consciousness, it's evolving. Now, if consciousness system is evolving, how would that take place? Well, in information systems, the way one evolves is to lower the entropy of the system. That's, you know, information. Anyone in information science out there will know that you can determine the amount of content you have based on the entropy of your system. In other words, your system is completely random. There is no content. If you have randomness contains no information. you need order or organization. You need structure to create content out of randomness. Okay, so this tells us now that we have a larger consciousness system, and that system is evolving by lowering its entropy. Okay, now what is this system? This larger consciousness system is us. Okay, we are a part of it. We are individuated units of consciousness. So you have the system, and we're chips off the old block, if you will. We're pieces of this consciousness system. We're all netted. We communicate with each other. We get a data stream of data, and from that data stream, we interpret that data as our reality. So those are just some of the kind of the fundamental basics of this theory. And as maybe a short aside, the science now is coming around to seeing that, assuming that reality is virtual and computed as opposed to objective, is gaining ground every day because it actually just does better physics. You can answer more of the questions of physics with that assumption than you can with the assumption that our reality is objective. So it's good science as well. Anyway, the way this ties, the way entropy then ties into, say, the spiritual, is that assume that you have a consciousness system, let's say a system of beings, a system of conscious beings. And the system of conscious beings are interrelating, they're connecting, they're communicating with each other because that's what an information system does. It shares data. Okay, now, so it's about relationship. It's about sharing data, sharing information, communication. Now, the optimal way to interact with others is with love. The worst way to interact with others is with fear. So love then becomes the way that a consciousness system, the individual units of consciousness, through interacting with love, they lower the entropy of the system. That's how the system evolves. It's also how the individual units of consciousness evolve. That's how we evolve. That's our purpose here, is to lower our entropy, which means raise the quality of our consciousness, evolve our consciousness, spiritual growth. All those things mean the same thing. So if you had let's say 10,000 individuals and they all related to each other with caring and love, and you gave them a certain amount of resources and then let them go and see what they would do, okay, what they would end up doing would be helping each other. If somebody came up with a really good idea, they would share it with everyone else. They would be there for each other. It wouldn't be self-centered. That group would make the most, would optimize their existence within those resources. Now take the opposite group based on fear, and fear is the opposite of love.
Yeah.
Hate is just a subset of fear. So take a bunch of people who are fearful, the same group, the same 10,000, given the same resources, and how would they interact? Well, it would all be, what about me? I have to make sure I get mine. That guy has some that I don't have, so I'll take them away from him because I'm bigger. You see, it's a fear. And then you're afraid that somebody bigger is going to take something away, so you have to get together with your friends to make sure that they don't do that. And pretty soon you have nation states and you have wars, and somebody comes up with a good idea, they're not going to share it. They're going to try to make something of it for themselves. They're going to want to profit from it, hide it. Somebody else's barn burns down, and instead of all the neighbors coming over to help rebuild it, they say, good, that guy's gone. Less competition. Prices will go up. You see, it's that kind of a world. Well, that's sort of the world we live in here. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference. So you can see, if you think of those two different sets, that the optimal way for relationship to work is with love. So now the evolution of consciousness then is a system that's evolving towards love. It's evolving toward becoming love. So what is love? Love is the state of a low entropy consciousness. That's what love is. Okay, so now we've defined love, and of course compassion is another expression of love, as is caring. Those things then are the way that we are evolving as we evolve as consciousness. We're evolving toward becoming love. That's our purpose. That's why we're here. This reality that we're in is like a schoolhouse where we learn to become love by decreasing our entropy. And we do that by making choices. We have free will. We're in this virtual reality. You can call it a virtual reality entropy reduction trainer, if you will. Here we are, and we have to interact with each other. And if we interact with love, then we optimize and we grow, and our entropy reduces. We evolve the quality of our consciousness. If we make poor choices and interact with fear, then we de-evolve. So that's really the kind of the big picture in a short thumbnail sketch of what we're doing here and how this digital system connects with love and compassion and the point of our existence.
Right. You know, I find it fascinating, and I think it's only since maybe psychology that we've tried to break, you know, fear into all of these different little pieces. And so there are still a lot of people out there that, you know, think hate is the opposite of love. And, you know, they isolate fear as the thing that, you know, is what we're afraid of. But ultimately, I 100% agree with you, and I'm not quite sure where I brought the two together, but I've always seen the two as the spectrum. And maybe that's where I can fit in so nice logically with you. But we have this greater perspective of how we've sort of de-evolved to where we are. Or maybe we haven't necessarily devolved yet, or we just haven't all evolved. We're definitely on a starter planet, for sure.
Yes, I like to say that, we're in this schoolhouse for budding units of consciousness to grow up. And this is not a graduate school. It's not even a high school. This is more like a daycare. So we're at the very beginning levels of our evolution. We're at the part where actually you have a lot of fast growth, because it's at the part where you don't have, you know, a whole lot of quality of consciousness created yet. We're still working on it. So yes, that's true, and that's obvious if you just pick up a newspaper or watch a TV show, that we do not have a lot of high quality consciousness, which means consciousness that is love in our environment. But we're working on it. Evolution is a slow process.
Yes, and now that makes me, I know we're going to have to go to break shortly, but it makes me want to ask you, because of your experience that you had without a body and because of the remote viewing, and obviously you weren't just going to this planet, were you able to see other entities that did have a higher evolution? And then we get into all the, the non-physical stuff, which
yes,
kind of
sure.
builds
have,
on it.
Yeah, I have gone to lots of places. There's lots of other physical realities like this one, but you know, different learning labs that are out there. There are beings that are in many different realities, lots of different dimensions of reality. Your dream reality is a different dimension. Most of us dream. The out-of-body, lucid dreaming, all these take place in virtual realities. They're not fundamental either. They're also virtual realities. And there are beings there who are much more evolved than us, and there's some that are even less evolved than us. It's a big place, and our universe is just a little tiny piece of it.
Right. Yeah, which is kind of interesting, because, you know, it opens up to so many other possibilities, but it also makes me think that, you know, just having some people hear what you had to say about us being, you know, in daycare will really push the ego button on quite a few people. Yeah. However, we're going to go to break. When we come back, you know, sometimes an hour just isn't enough, but we will do what we can. Yeah. You're listening to Intuitive Soul with Friends with Lori Houston from intuitivesoul.com and Tom Campbell from mybigtoe.com on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Enlighten, empower, enrich. This is CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries. All day long, we're devoted to your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being. With your direct connect to the stars, Lisa J. Smith, The Dr. Pat Show, Liz Souza, Barbara Mackey, Glynis McCants, The Wake Up Call with L. Newman and Tom Force. let us know how we're doing. 248-545-7685.
Log on.
NewSkyRadio.com.
24 hours a day. Your spiritual well-being is our concern.
Awaken the extraordinary.
Live the life you've imagined. Look up to the sky.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
NewSkyRadio.com.
New horizons, no boundaries. CBS Radio's The Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul with Lori Houston.
248-545-SOUL.
248-545-7685. NewSkyRadio.com.
Welcome back. This is Lori Houston from IntuitiveSoul.com, and you are joined today every Friday, every last Friday of the month, with Tom Campbell, who is a physicist who has, you know, a wealth of information. His book, his series of books called My Big Toe, is actually available on Google Books for free. You can search My Big Toe and find it pretty much all over the internet, but Google Books, it's for free. He also has hours and hours of video footage that's on YouTube. And if you go to YouTube and you do a search on Tom Campbell, you will get all of his stuff. His actual address is TWCJR44. But if you search on YouTube for Tom Campbell, all of his stuff comes up. And there is, you've put weekends on there. I mean, you really, if you're interested in the information, and we will definitely go through more of this information in depth. And in fact, if you have something that you would like to discuss on any of our shows, please email either of us. You go to either of our websites and email us on what you would like to hear as a topic, and we will definitely explore that, because it is a different perspective than a lot of people. And we barely scratched the surface, because when we start getting into data and how unique Tom sees the world, you will see that it's a little bit different from our typical shows here on Sky Radio, and certainly with me. But we weave it together in a way that I think is amazing, because we do, in the end, it comes together in a way that we both completely agree with and completely understand, which is that we're all moving towards love, and we're all moving towards evolution. And one of the things that I did want to mention, and I know we don't have a whole lot of time, but this segment is a bit short. I did want to ask, you know, there's a book or there's a movie called Tree of Life, and I know a lot of people have been seeing it. It was out on limited release because it wasn't a big Hollywood movie, even though it does have Brad Pitt and Sean Penn in it. The name of the movie was called Tree of Life, but the premise of it is how one family was struggling with the concept of grace versus nature. And it has a lovely quote about, you know, how nature is what we sort of force ourselves against. So we're always striving. We're always pushing ourselves to get more and pushing ourselves to be something. And that fits in with fear. Or we move through grace, which is this acceptance that everything is the way it's supposed to be. But there's also this underlying theme of, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? And that's part of what the movie is about, trying to explain that. But I just love the concept of grace, because it's I think it's my new word now. Instead of love, it's grace, because we try to fit everything in this box, which we will talk about another time, but how we try to control everything. And grace is just this complete surrender and acceptance. And I just wondered if you wanted to touch on that a little bit and how you saw that.
I agree with what you're saying there about grace. Grace is basically a giving up of control. We like to control what happens to us. We like to control the results of what happens to us. And we don't actually have a whole lot of control. You know, things that happen to us basically are, most of the time, if they're important things, they have elements in them that are outside of our control. So we can maybe control bits and pieces of it, but mostly what happens, you know, where we end up, what we do, the kind of things that take place that matter to us, have large kind of random components in it. So the way to approach that is to stop struggling. As long as you're struggling, trying to force nature, as you call it, in order to force nature to give you what you want and for things to be the way you'd like to have them, it's a constant struggle, and it's a constant disappointment and a constant frustration. So your life becomes this stream of effort and struggle and frustration, and it goes round and round and round, and it's like you're a character in a soap opera. You don't seem to ever be able to get your head above water but for a few minutes before another wave crashes over you. And that's because you define reality in terms of struggle, in terms of control, making things happen the way you want. Having your children grow up the way you want them to grow up. Having, you know, your boss give you the credit that you'd like to have. All these things. Once you have this concept of grace, then you basically let that control grow. You realize that why we're here is to experience and then make choices related to that experience that help us evolve, help us move toward love, help us to lower our entropy. So things happen. You're here in this virtual reality trainer. Things happen, and your job is to react to those things, is to deal with those things and deal with them in such a way that you move toward love. And if you're constantly dealing with them in a way that you want to control them, then you're not moving toward love. You're just fighting an endless battle that will never end. So one needs to let go of the control. One needs to let go of having to force things, other people, and events to suit you, and just accept them. Find the lesson in them. How is it that you could react to this circumstance and grow from it? And you can grow from almost anything. Look at Viktor Frankl, right? A Jew who was captured by the Gestapo, by the Nazis in World War II, put in a prison camp, his children, his wife, all slaughtered by the Nazis, and he came out of it a better person. He grew from it. He started a new branch of psychology after it. He found a way to turn that into a positive thing. He learned from it. So you can learn from almost any situation. You just have to let go of the struggle, find the grace, and then make the decisions that move you toward love.
Wow. Well, that is actually a perfect way to end our show, because that really summed it all up. Wow. Well, this is going to be, I think, one of my favorite segments of my show on Fridays, and I know that a lot of people will join me in that thought, because it's an interesting way of looking at the world. And so I'm very excited that you have joined us, and I do really thank you, Tom, for coming onto the show and being a part of us. And I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving and hope you have a very grateful peace within this weekend.
Well, thank you, Lori, and I would like to echo that. Everybody have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Find those things in your life to give thanks for. It's a time when we kind of accentuate the positive, and that's good for everyone. And enjoy.
Yes. Enjoy. You've been listening to Intuitive Soul of Friends with Tom Campbell and Lori Houston. Tom can be reached at mybigtoe.com on Sky Radio, powered by CBS. See you next week.